Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Good morning. My name's Adam Jones. I'm one of the co-authors of the FT's management blog. I'm here at the FT's London headquarters to talk to Roger Martin, the Dean of the Rotman School of Management of the University of Toronto. We're here to talk about how managers often get sucked into talking about false either-or choices, when it seems that option A is incompatible with option B, when actually, according to Roger's theory, the two options could somehow be synthesized with a bit of creative thinking. Now, Roger, you have framed this problem in terms of integrative thinking, and that's what you think differentiates the top managers from those who get bogged down in binary either-or choices. Why does that happen, where managers think that there's only one or one of two options that they could choose?
Well, often they end up thinking there's only one right way because they've looked at the world and modeled the world, they've kind of created an understanding of that world that then they confuse with reality. It's actually their model, their abstraction, but it's a reality, and they say, well, I think the world works this way. And so if somebody comes up with another model, rather than saying, what are the meritorious aspects of that? What are they paying attention to that I didn't pay attention to? How could I build some of that into mine? They're more inclined to say, well, that's different and it conflicts with mine, so it must be wrong, so I should stick with my model. And it would be dangerous to even think about that other model because then I might get convinced that it's better, and wouldn't that be a problem? So they almost prevent themselves from thinking about what's better than these two models.
So when managers are seeking to frame a business problem and how they might go about tackling it, what is the best way of going about that without getting sucked into that binary opposition?
Well, one thing is to get other people's help in framing problems. You can only see what you see, right? The old expression, you don't know what you don't know. And other people can know things that you don't know, i.e. they'll look at a situation and because of their experience, their background, their frame of it, they'll see things that you don't see, they'll see causal relationships that you might not. And so I think if you frame things and dive into problems all by yourself, you'll quickly get into, if you're not careful, narrowing things down and getting a narrow picture that then makes it hard to come up with something creative out of, because you aren't looking at enough from which to extract something creative.
So it's a case of using other people to stop yourself from applying an unconscious filter to the information that you're taking in.
Yeah, that's a very good way of putting it, because it is a very unconscious filter, and just by interacting with somebody else, they can get you thinking, oh wow, I had never thought of that. And often what you mean is, I didn't mean to filter that out.
And what are some good examples of business leaders who have framed problems in a way that really kind of differed from how they were framed previously, and have found perhaps a third way that didn't necessarily involve an either-or situation?
Sure. One might be Izzy Sharp, the founder of Four Seasons Hotel, the most successful and largest luxury hotel chain in the world. He faced what people told him was an either-or choice: either build small motels, low-cost kind of small motels, or big city, center city convention hotels. He didn't like the lack of amenities of the former, the small motel, but he liked their intimacy and comfort, and the opposite for the large city centers. Lots of amenities, but cold and unfriendly. And instead of that, he engineered a new model, which was the medium-size luxury hotel with great intimacy and comfort and fantastic service that was smaller than people thought could be made to work in terms of the, affording the amenities, et cetera. So he has got the best luxury hotel chain in the world on the basis of rejecting it's an either or and instead creating a new, better model.
And when managers are consulting with people to try and screen out their own unconscious prejudices, I mean, how worried should they be about issues like confidentiality? If you're trying to get a view from outside the company, for instance, you might be worried that you'll give something away that really should be kept within the organization.
You know, I don't think that's an unrealistic fear, but I think it tends to be exaggerated. I mean, I think there are cases where people have thought their secrets have been stolen by an outsider, but I think in most situations you can sign confidentiality agreements and the like. And I think I actually think more of it is an issue of confidence. I think actually sometimes people within organizations, CEOs, won't consult with somebody within the organization because they sort of fear that their model will be trumped by somebody else's, or they will be seen as not being very leaderly. And one of the things I found with my research is it's the CEOs or the senior managers who consult widely with other people are viewed as the most decisive and most leaderly. And it's because they exude the confidence that says, you know, we're going to come up with a great idea. It doesn't have to be 100% mine. So I think while it's a fear, it's probably more exaggerated than it ought to be.
Another potential problem with very, very deep and extensive consultation is that sometimes it's hard to actually reach a decision at the end of that process. And when do you actually call a halt to the consultation? How should managers avoid that potential problem?
Well, I think it's by having a real standard in your mind of what is a sufficiently elegant solution. And this is again what I found with the folks I interviewed on this front and studied is that they really had a sense that said this isn't a good enough decision. There's too much of an unpleasant trade-off here. And then they get to a point where they say, good, this is good enough to go on. Now they don't necessarily say that's going to be the perfect answer, but they say we can go with this and we'll try it out and maybe we'll improve whatever. So Izzy Sharp, we'll build the Inn on the Park in London and see how that works, and then we'll improve on that. But it's establishing that sense in advance of what's my standard for how good an answer has to be for me to say it's okay. Not perfection. They're not perfectionist. It's good enough.
And a final question about the current, what I would describe as a climate of fear in business at the moment. There's talk of recession. There's great fears about the security of the financial products that have boomed over recent years. I mean, what kind of false binary oppositions do you think managers might be getting sucked into right now?
Well, I think you're right to point out. I think fear is a real driver of saying I have to choose. I have to choose right now, and if I wait, bad things will happen. So I think when fear descends, there's more of this kind of binary notion. And you know, and I'd argue the interesting thing that's happened with Bear Stearns is it would be an example. Right, the offer has now been upped a mere 5 times for it. Well, I think it's fear that drove them to say we either let Bear Stearns go down and they destroy the financial system, or sell it to J.P. Morgan for $2 a share. Well, you know, it's turning out that's actually evidently wasn't the choice. It's let it go down or sell it for $10 a share, 5 times as much. That's maybe a trite or simple example, but I think when you frame those things, it's either this or that, and both of them are negative. We're going to really, you know, punish the shareholders terribly, or we're going to destroy the financial system. No, there's probably some other answer that'll be a better answer.
Roger Martin, thank you very much for your time.
Hey, it's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.